But first, the ALP and the Greens have accused One Nation of selling out older workers after the party flipped its vote to help pass the Coalition's JobMaker scheme. The new scheme rejects safeguards that would have prevented existing workers being sacked or losing hours to make way for new hires aged 35 and under. Tina Quinn asked the Shadow Minister for Employment, Brendan O'Connor, about his concerns around the new scheme.
Well, we have several problems with the scheme. Firstly, it's way too small to respond to the biggest economic challenge we've had since the Great Depression. We've got a recession that we're dealing with. So we've got concern about the scale. The government boasted it would lead to 450,000 jobs, but Treasury has confirmed it's likely to be 45,000. And that is quite small. But nonetheless, we want to support the scheme because it will still add to the labour market, increase job opportunities for younger people. Our fear is, though, that if not properly regulated and if there are not sufficient safeguards, existing employees could be sacked or have their hours reduced and replaced by subsidised cheaper workers. And that would be unfair to those workers who are currently employed. So we sought from the government an amendment, which they did originally allow to pass the Senate. And, of course, One Nation did support originally. Unfortunately, last night, One Nation backflipped, either because they were fooled into doing so by the government, or they did a grubby deal with the government in order to expose existing workers to possible dismissal or reduction of hours.
Pauline Hanson's One Nation has always maintained that protecting workers' rights was the cornerstone of their party's policies. What do you think motivated them to completely backflip?
Well, I think it's just that quite often with Senator Roberts, it's the last person who spoke to him and convinces him. Clearly, they flip-flop all the time. Once you think you've got their support on a very significant matter, like we did with this particular safeguard for workers, the government then sweet-talks them and they fall for it. Or they make some grubby deal about another matter that's unrelated to the matter before them in the Senate. This is not the first instance. In fact, they're serial offenders when it comes to talking up their support for workers, but voting against them. So whatever they might say in Queensland or around Australia, quite often their actions are contrary to their words when it comes to voting for legislation, unfortunately.
What do you fear the greatest pitfalls of the scheme will be for Australian workers?
There are many, many people currently employed in many sectors of the economy that are not guaranteed minimum hours. And they could, for example, casual workers can be terminated with 1 hour's notice. Now, the idea that someone who might have been working for months in a given job be sacked to be replaced by a subsidised worker is an anathema, I think, to most Australians. But there is no prescribed safeguard to stop that. Further, casuals don't have guaranteed minimum hours. And for that matter, there are other employees who don't necessarily have a set hours, and they could have their hours reduced, their rosters changed, to be instead filled with subsidised workers. Now, we want those unemployed people to get onto those subsidised jobs, but they must be additional. They shouldn't be replacing existing workers. And our strong view is that if the government had supported the safeguards, it would be far less likely that rogue employers would displace or dismiss their existing workforce or reduce their hours for those that might be eligible for this subsidy. It's quite extraordinary the government did not want to protect those workers, given that the purpose of the scheme is to add to the employment levels, and that would only be replacing people. So for all sorts of reasons, it is very disappointing that Scott Morrison and Josh Frydenberg chose not to accept our amendments. And then for that reason, I think we're going to see examples of just what we've outlined.
If you were in government, what would you be putting forward?
Well, I've got no problem with a scheme that focuses on young people. I mean, during the recession, there are a series of things that can be done. And that includes wage subsidies for particular age cohorts. Our concern, though, is that they've got a job restart program that hasn't really worked. They've still half the funding still there. Within 3 months, anyone who's received a job over the age of 50 no longer employed. So it's not a very strong scheme. But Labor doesn't oppose having schemes in place to support workers to enter the workforce. We support them. We suggested JobKeeper when the government said originally that it was not needed. Our view is that JobKeeper, however, should not be cut and then should not be abolished too early. And our view is it's been cut too soon and abolished too early, and that scheme would have been better to continue throughout next year, at least beyond March. That would have been a fairer arrangement. It would have meant that recovering businesses would not hit the wall, which they may well do once JobKeeper's gone, and thousands upon thousands of workers which will be employed. But my fear is at the end of March next year, when JobKeeper is ripped away, businesses will collapse and workers will lose their work, and they'll be lining down employment queues. And they will not be eligible, remember, for hiring credits. It doesn't work that way. And so they can't move from one scheme to the next. They'll be unemployed.
Brendan O'Connor, I appreciate you speaking with me. One question I do need to ask before you go. Following his resignation from the front bench yesterday, how much support do you think there will be for Joel Fitzgibbon's position in the party room?
Well, Joel is a long-time colleague and friend of mine, and he will remain so. He's a member of the caucus, and he's an experienced colleague. But the way in which policy is determined is by the shadow cabinet and, of course, by caucus. I would suggest that while some of the points that Joel has made are absolutely important to take into account, I absolutely agree with him, we have to reconcile these competing interests and present a policy that really does deal with the challenges ahead for the country. And I don't think it's about taking one individual's view. It's about reconciling competing tensions and presenting a policy. And I can assure you of this. Before the next election, with respect to the energy policy, we will have that policy presented to the Australian people for them to make a decision as to whether Labor or the Liberal Party, who, by the way, have had 22 separate energy policies because one after the other have been a fail, which of the two major parties are going to deal with the challenges of the 21st century. I would suggest it's going to be Labor, but of course we need to reconcile those differences, but we will. But passionate debates within political parties is a good thing. Ultimately, well before the election though, you'll see a united Labor Party presenting a suite of policies to deal with a whole range of issues, including how we deal with climate change and how we make sure we have cheap, reliable energy sources for our industry and for consumers generally.
Right. So do you foresee a greater focus being put on renewables then?
Well, I think renewables are the future, but the combination of energy sources matter. I mean, there's no doubt that and Anthony Albanese has made this very clear. But the market, where is the money going? Where's the investment going? Of course, it's increasingly going towards renewables, but other sources of energy, including traditional sources of energy, will be part of Australia's future. We're in a period of transition, but it's not going to happen in weeks or years. It's going to happen over time. I guess unlike the coalition, Labor supports renewables, but also understands that traditional sources of energy will make up the energy mix of this nation and will articulate exactly our position before the next election. But I think this is the point that really matters in terms of the broader debate. Labor, along with almost every country, well, all of Europe, the Biden administration, soon to be sworn in, Japan, Korea, support zero emissions by 2050. Scott Morrison doesn't. We are an outlier. We're really at odds with most of the world, and really the pressure is on the government to reconcile this position of Australia being so far away from the consensus that's growing around the world. And it's really for them to answer as to why they won't do that.
Brendan O'Connor, Shadow Minister for Employment, speaking there with Tina Quinn.